We're going to actually talk a little bit right after. I'm going to do Kirk first. Because we're going to come back to activism a little bit. But the other half of the title was legalization. So we're going to come back to, we'll go a little bit more into legalization and then kind of come back and marry the two together. One of the proudest moments in my life, actually, was reading Justice Phelan's ruling and seeing that my testimony had actually affected him. Being able to affect a judge like that is something that Mr. Tussaud makes a career out of. So Kirk, you wanted to kind of talk a little bit about home growing and how that fits within basically the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, in particular Section 7.
Yeah, thank you, Jamie, and thank you for your testimony, and Allard. And I just want to take a moment to recognize the people that have pioneered this industry. You saw some of them on the panel immediately before this one, who put their liberty at risk every day in order to advance social acceptance of cannabis and medical cannabis in order to advance political and legal goals. We hear a lot of discussion now about what legalization is going to look like, legislation anticipated in the spring of 2017, and I wanted to just make a few comments on home production or personal production of recreational or adult-use cannabis and how that fits into the charter. I think there's a general misunderstanding of what the charter analysis looks like. Because we talk about whether there's a right to grow at home or a right to grow medical cannabis at home, and that's really the wrong question. And it's the wrong question for this reason. In a free and democratic society that is committed to principles of individual autonomy and maximizing individual choice, the starting point is not what they will allow you to do. The starting point is liberty and what constrains the government's ability to restrict your liberty. Canada is not a parliamentary democracy any longer. Canada is a constitutional democracy with the enshrinement of the Charter. And Section 7 of the Charter says to government, it's a restriction on government conduct. It says to the government that you are not entitled to infringe the life, the liberty, or the security of the person of any Canadian citizen unless you do so in accordance with the principles of fundamental justice. Now, that's a pretty heavy phrase, so let's unpack it a little bit. The analysis in the courts are, number one, can you demonstrate on a balance of probabilities that your rights have been infringed? And so let's look at the case of a legal cannabis environment in which there's a criminal prohibition still in place on growing for yourself, growing this plant for yourself. Clearly, your liberty interests have been infringed because there is a criminal prohibition restricting your individual conduct. That's the case anytime there's a criminal prohibition that restricts any of your individual conduct. So the rights infringement portion of the analysis, the first part where you ask, has liberty been infringed, has to be answered in the positive anytime there's a criminal prohibition. I would go further to say there's also a restriction on your security of the person. Your security of the person is what protects your ability to make autonomous choices about things that are serious and important to you as an individual. It's your conception of what the good is in your own life. And I say that when you're criminally restricted from growing this plant, your security of the person is also implicated. So let's ask then what the second part of the analysis is. Does that restriction accord with the principles of fundamental justice? Now, what are they? Very interestingly, the first case of the Supreme Court of Canada to determine Section 7 and its relationship to cannabis was the Malma Levine, Clay, and Cain case. David was up here earlier. He's one of the early warriors on this, and as he said, he represented himself in the Supreme Court of Canada. Video's available online. He did a great job. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court of Canada did not find that simple possession, the ban on simple possession, offended the Charter. The difference, though, is that since that decision, there's been a fairly significant development in the law about what we understand the principles of fundamental justice to be. And so in the context of a criminal prohibition, those principles of fundamental justice are, is the law arbitrary? Well, what does that mean? It means, does the law achieve its purpose, or does, in fact, it act contrary to its purpose? The purpose of the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act is the protection of public health and safety. That was found by the Supreme Court of Canada in the Smith case. It was confirmed by the federal judge in Allard. And so what we were able to demonstrate in Allard, with Jamie's help and the help of many other people, is that the MMPR restricted individual liberty, and it did so in a manner that actually made people's health worse. It actually impacted their safety and their health in a negative way. Well, a law that is designed to protect public health and safety, but in fact has the opposite result, is arbitrary. And so I would say to you that a restriction on personal production of cannabis in an otherwise legal environment is arbitrary, because the only outcome of that restriction, that criminal restriction, is a negative impact both on the individual's health and safety and on the public health and safety, because the activity will be driven underground and into the black market. There's another principle of fundamental justice known as overbreadth. That's when a law, otherwise rational on its face, in any individual circumstance goes too far. And again, we saw that in Allard. Yes, it's true that you can grow cannabis quite dangerously. That does occur from time to time. But for any individual person, you can grow it perfectly safely with no detrimental impacts either to your own or to communities' health and safety. And so for each individual plaintiff in Allard, the government was unable to demonstrate that the purpose of the statute, protection of health and safety, was implicated in that person's case. And therefore, the law was also overbroad. There's a third principle called the principle of gross disproportionality, which stands for the basic proposition that the punishment can't be grossly more severe than the harm to be prevented. And I would say that if you can go to the store and buy cannabis, if you can have a business selling cannabis and making money lawfully in a social use or adult use way, how then can you visit the criminal consequences, including jail, locking human beings in cages, on people who are growing that self-same plant at home with no risk to others for their own personal consumption? I say you can't do that and have a law that is consistent with Section 7 of the Charter. And so when we talk about what legalization might look like, and I hear the government may or may not be considering home production, the reality is if there's no home production, if there's no right to produce this plant for yourself, not for commercial purposes, but for yourself or for non-commercial trading with your friends like you can with all manner of other things, then it's not truly legalization, and the lawsuit will be filed the day after the law is brought into effect, and we'll have to go back to court and fight for these rights as we have so many times over the past 20 years on this issue. So I hope not to have to do that, quite frankly, but I'm certainly ready to do it if it becomes necessary to do so, and I believe we would win. Thank you.
I've always had a bit of a problem with the public health arguments, not that I feel that they're not important, but that I feel that they overly focus on the harms and they don't really consider possible benefits very much. So trying to balance real public health concerns against imaginary public health concerns and how that was going to fit into legalization, do you have any thoughts on that, Mark?
Funny that you ask. Sure, I'd like to comment on both what Kirk and Jody have said. There's a number of issues coming down the federal government pipe at us that I'd love to look at from the public health perspective. So should the dispensaries be part of the next system is a very interesting question. And the public health argument essentially says yes. But the reason for it is an interesting one. There's an author out there named Wilkinson who wrote a book called The Spirit Level that did a wonderful analysis of social problems in our society, everything from low birth weight babies to murder rates to addiction rates. And what he said is one of those compelling drivers of problems in all societies, inegalitarianism, which means the distance between the rich and the poor. If you have a society that concentrates wealth at the top of the pyramid, it tends to be a very sick society, and you have many social problems resulting from that. So if we build a system that sells cannabis that concentrates money at the top of the pile, we will have a sicker society than if we spread the money around. So the dispensaries, by definition, tend to be very small. They're individuals, people sitting at the table, or small groups of people. They're not large multinational corporations. And so in a public health argument, you'd keep the existing dispensaries, you'd require them to stay relatively small, and you'd have lots of them. That's an egalitarian argument.
Thank you. Yeah.